Long, long away, in a galaxy far, far ago, those two guys from Andromeda decided to rid the universe of boring software space games. They had a cosmic concept, a vulcanized vision, and perhaps a little too much free time. Emanating from their cerebral cavities came forth the Space Quest series with Roger Wilco, intergalactic sanitary engineer.
Hello, you are listening to Barrel Roll, the official podcast of WingDamage.com. This is bonus episode number 3, which is our Space Quest Retrospective, Part 2.
Hang on, here we go!
I'm once again joined by, and that voice you just heard was Mr. Colin P., Colin Panetta, and I am Jonah the Spambot Gregory, with my unfortunate nickname that haunts me to this day. So we'll continue right where we left off last week.
So then, the next year, 1990, we did not have a new Space Quest game. Oh no, we did. We had a remake of Space Quest, the Sarian Encounter. And I'm not sure if that's even the right pronunciation of Sarian. I may be pronouncing that completely differently every time. there were no speech in any of those games, so I don't know how to pronounce it. And this was a VGA remake. The original was an EGA. And they stuck pretty close to the game in terms of story and dialogue. I think in dialogue. But the visuals, they redid a lot of them to have a kind of like 1950s B-movie science fiction feel.
Right.
Which, you know, is cool. It's not really Space Quest. So, you know, it's kind of like Space Quest 1 remade is not really a Space Quest game. But, so it wasn't, Scott Murphy and Mark Crowe, the two guys who designed, the first four other Space Quest games, main Space Quest games, they didn't really have too much to do with this. They seemed kind of like aware of its existence and not much else. One thing of note for this game is that it, in addition to Space Quest IV, which we'll start going over in a minute, were, I think, the only games ever, maybe the only Sierra video games ever to use the taste and smell icons. Like,
yes.
Instead of just, like, picking stuff up or walking somewhere, looking at something, you could also taste and smell stuff.
Right, which were, like, totally superfluous. You, like, never actually needed to use them, as far as I remember.
Yeah, they were barely used in either game, and they were only used to make jokes.
Yes.
Just for stupid stuff for the narrator to say. I honestly don't think there's a single puzzle where tasting or smelling anything did anything for you.
Not that I recall. Yeah, but this did add in the, it was a point-and-click remake.
You know, that's a really good point. I didn't have that in the notes. It's the first Space Quest game to have a point-and-click interface.
Right, and Sierra did several of these where they remade the original game in a series, but with better graphics to make it a modern take on it. And the only, I mean, I guess I could see why they were doing that was to maybe get some renewed interest in some of these series. Because, you know, sometimes if people see Part 4, they think they need to have played 1 through 3.
Sure.
Space Quest, you can usually just jump in. Pretty much all the Sierra games, most of them, you can just jump right into whichever one. And even though some of them will reference older games in the series, you're not going to be completely lost or anything. They're still playable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember I played this on the disc that, you know, that collection that had all of them. And at the time, I enjoyed the fact that it was a point-and-click version of the game, but it is kind of weird looking back how much they changed the aesthetic of it and stuff from the original game. And I seem to remember them in, I believe this was the one where they kind of made Roger look a little bulkier, like he actually had some muscle mass to him, which doesn't really fit the character.
Yeah, they did. I remember the part where he falls down a pit, and they had like a fully painted picture of him spiraling down this like trap door, and he was, yeah, he was pretty muscly.
But, yeah, I mean, it was the same overall plot in most of the puzzles. If you knew how to solve them in text parser, you could figure them out pretty easily in the point-and-click version. Yeah. So I don't remember there being too much difference between the two as far as that went. They had added a few little Easter eggs, like you had mentioned, where you can, instead of having to do the saving reload thing on the slot machine, there was a magnet that you could attach to it.
A lot of people complained about that, I think.
Because it made it too easy.
No, people complained because the original was too hard, so they were like, let's put this magnet in here so people can just, you know, get it.
I see. So this was retroactively making up for those complaints.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous because they just, like, stuck a magnet on the side of something earlier in the game. Like, there's no even reason for a magnet to be there. You just kind of, like, pick up this magnet that was clearly just stuck there and then use it later. So then the next year, in 1991, March of 1991, in fact, we had Space Quest IV, Roger Wilco and the Time Ropers. Other games released in 1991 include Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge from LucasArts, probably the best early LucasArts game.
That is a series Monkey Island I need to go back to. I've never played. I've only played the later. Probably the latest one that also came out on PS2.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which I've heard is actually not very good compared to any of the other ones.
Oh, it's terrible. I played it for like maybe 2 days, a couple of hours tops. It's really bad. I only played Monkey Island in the last couple of years, and I kind of avoided it for a while, just because, you know, like Pirates of the Caribbean, like everyone likes pirates and stuff, and
yeah,
I know this
jerks.
I know this is a battle you fight on a regular basis.
Yes.
But because of your excellent comic book, Here There Be Robots.
Well, thank you.
But
like I tell people, I'm more in it for the sci-fi, the robots, and the aliens, but because of those pirates, people assume I'm this huge pirate fanatic.
Well, I was a fool for holding that stuff against Monkey Island, because those games are awesome, and Monkey Island 2 is the best one by far. In 1991, we also had Super Mario Bros. 3.
Awesome game.
We had Sonic the Hedgehog,
also
which
amazing.
Some people may remember. Yeah. We had Tecmo Super Bowl. Another game on this list is F-Zero. Was that for NES?
That was a Super Nintendo.
It was
a very, very early Super Nintendo release.
Gotcha.
Which is it's actually pretty much Jesse's favorite racing game series.
Yeah, yeah. Another game that came out in 1991 was a game called Another World. Do you know about this game, Jonah?
No, that was called Out of This World in the States, at least on the console releases.
That's right, I kind of remember that now. Yeah, I have memories of playing this game when I was really young, and it just really freaked me out because it's very strange.
I remember that as well. That was actually what drew me to it. It was so bizarre, and I was like, I remember seeing it on display, like, because there was a PC version. I remember seeing it on the displays at Sears, and I'm like, there's this redheaded guy, and he does the, like, live long and prosper, and then he gets shot by, like, an alien holding a laser gun.
That's right, yeah.
And I was, I had the Super Nintendo version for a long time, and
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, I actually have beat it more or less. There was like a chunk in the middle I could never get past, so I eventually found the code for the last level, and after many, many, many tries, I did eventually finish it.
Well, if you can believe it, back then I played it on my friend's Mac.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was really cool. And it was also the very first game to use polygons. It has a very distinct style. Like I said, it's a really artistic video game. So that was definitely a landmark back then. The game Civilization, I don't know too much about the game Civilization.
Oh, it's a great strategy game. I don't know if the board game was first or if the video game was first, but I started on with Civ 2, and yeah, they're very, very addictive.
We had Police Quest 3, The Kindred. We had Leisure Suit Larry 5. Man, they really must have been pumping those out, huh?
Yeah, I think one of the inside jokes with Leisure Suit Larry is one of the early numbered games doesn't exist, I believe. So I think
that's
like
right,
two
I
or three that. Just like doesn't actually exist or something.
The subtitle of Leisure Suit Larry 5 is Passionate Patty Does a Little Undercover Work. A little innuendo there. And the last game we have on the list is Goblins, spelled with three I's, which came out from Sierra,
which I always thought looked really cool,
but I don't know anything about
it. No, me neither. And the one you skipped on your list was Road Rash, which is actually one of Brittany's favorite games from when she was a kid, because
you're on the motorcycle and you have like chains and stuff, right? Yeah, that's awesome.
You fight each other on motorcycles as you're racing.
So just to reiterate for people, the last game came out in 1989, Space Quest III. This is Space Quest IV. It came out in 1991.
Yeah.
So yeah, a couple of years later, but graphics are a whole different story now.
Right, and I was surprised to read when you're doing your research, the minimum requirements were still just the 8088 and 8086 processors. I'm kind of blown away by that, but I guess processors didn't really take off until they started doing that different numbering system with like the 286, 386, 486, and then eventually the Pentiums. Now I don't
Those
know a lot about
processors are the way of the future, man.
Yeah, I mean I don't know a lot about how all that hardware works and what corresponds to which version of what hardware. So I mean,
I'm sure the game looked completely different if you were playing it with that, right?
I bet, yeah. So I was gonna say, I mean, I'm sure if someone can correct us in the show notes or the comments at the bottom, that's fine. Because like I said, I don't know a lot about what the difference in those processors were, but it also required 640 kilobytes of RAM. So it was another step up. No longer supported CGA. You had to have at least EGA. It had MCGA, which I'm not exactly sure what that one is. Still supported the Tandy hardware. But, of course, most people played this one on the VGA card. It also supported that same giant list of sound cards that we mentioned in the last one that I don't want to reread. And it came.
I'll let you get away with that one.
Originally came on the 3.5 floppies and the 5.25, but then there was also a CD-ROM version. And I don't know if those were released simultaneously or if there was any time between the two versions.
I think the CD was later, and the disc versions did not have voice.
Right, yeah. I remember the floppy disk versions of any of those old adventure games never had the, for the most part, didn't. I'm sure there was a few that came on, a ridiculously high number of diskettes, like 8 or 9 discs that you'd have to install if it was the one that had the voices. There's even some back in the day that you could buy the voice pack separately after the CD-ROMs came out. But yeah, most people I know played the CD version. It was actually a lot of, when people were really starting to promote CD-ROMs to buy, to upgrade your computer with, they'd come with a package of software, and some of those actually came with this game. But to buy it on its own, it was at the $59.95 price point. So, that's normal now for like a 360 game and stuff. And I mean, I know cartridges, there was always those shortages, which would drive up the prices, but, this was a CD. I mean, that's pretty pricey.
We're now at $220 for 4 Space Quest games.
Wow. This one is the point and click interface, which was described as, Classic Sierra point and click, because they changed the way they did those games after a while.
The games previous to this were, as we said, text parser, where you had to type your character's actions in. Now they actually had a menu at the top of the screen that would have a few different pictures. It would have like a picture of a guy walking, it would have a picture of a guy talking, it would have a picture of a hand, and you would use those different icons. You would click the mouse on them, on the hand, when you wanted to pick something up, and then your cursor would turn into a hand, and you would click that hand on whatever you wanted to pick up. And this is the way that Sierra Games worked for until they stopped making them.
Yeah. There were a few very late, I think one of the last King's Quest games, where instead of having the list at the top, you just had to cycle through them or something like that. But, yeah, yeah. They kept a very similar interface throughout after this point.
LucasArts did a really good job of trying to think of alternative ways to present the interface. Like in Full Throttle, they had a you would click on the object that you wanted to interact with, and then right where you click the mouse, a little menu would pop up that was in the style of a tattoo, and it would have like a mouth on it for talking or a hand on it for picking stuff up. They were a little more experimental, but Sierra really stuck to their guns on this interface at the top of the screen thing.
Yeah, they kind of made it so if you played one Sierra game, you had no trouble picking up any of their other games that were same system, because they all used the same interface. But the plot of this one was that Roger is being chased through time. So he's being chased through past and future Space Quest games. You go through, in the future, Space Quest 10, The Latex Babes of Estros. Space Quest 12, Vohal's Revenge 2, which is a play on their own second game in the series. The sequel police are actually the guys that are after him, who are taking orders directly from Sludge Vohal, so Roger's old nemesis who has returned. And then with his travels through time, Roger eventually meets his own son and is told that a great future is waiting for him with his wife, which is Beatrice Wankmeister, I guess was her name.
I always wondered about that name.
Yeah, and I didn't get those kind of jokes when I was playing this as a kid, so to me, this
never
game
addressed
was
in any way.
No, but this is
I never understood the sequel police. I still don't to this day. Like, where did the sequel police come from? What's their agenda? Why are they called the sequel police? They were just these robots called the sequel police, and I guess since this game went through all the Space Quest sequels, past and future, it made sense that you were being pursued by these sequel police, but I never understood. Like, they seem to be taking orders from Vohal for some reason, but I don't know. They're just there to keep tabs on all the sequels or something?
Yeah, it didn't really go into it. They wanted some sort of, you know, evil force that was driving you forward, I guess.
You know, maybe that was the point, was that it was just really vague, you know? They were just the sequel police.
It may be the kind of thing that when you're the one writing it, you don't notice the giant gap in the plot until someone else looks at it and points it out to you. Yeah, but this was the second one I played, and I think this was the first game I played at home that had like voices and stuff, because I think in school we had a couple like copies of like Carmen Sandiego or something that, you know, used the CD-ROM medium, which was very new at the time, to add in sound clips and video clips and goofy stuff like that. But to be a game that was like fully voiced and stuff was pretty cool. I mean, they had some actually pretty funny voice acting. They got now what was the guy that did the announcer? I can never remember his name. It was
Gary Owens.
Gary Owens. Yes, I always want to say Oldman. I'm like, that's not right.
that's a different guy.
Yeah, different guy entirely. But yeah, and he was hilarious in the game. They had him, instead of just the narrator text making fun of you, they had him making fun of you.
Yeah, he was great. He was this guy from the 70s, and he had this really, like, almost like a superhero-type voice where he just would say stuff like, "You did it completely wrong." Like,
"Now you've done it. You've really done it."
Just, which is like more demeaning when he's so like chipper and excited about it, you know?
Yeah.
And he was famous for being on, there was a really campy 70s TV show called Laughin', where they would like tell a joke and then these people with body paint all over them would dance for like 10 seconds and then another joke would come. Like, literally, that was the show. He was the announcer on that show.
What's up with that?
Nice.
But people closer to our age probably know him better as the voice of Powdered Toast Man on Ren and Stimpy.
I didn't realize he was the same guy that was the original Space Ghost.
Yeah, he was the original Space Ghost. Not anything that we know. Yeah.
Which I only know because they, when Cartoon Network was brand new, they would show these late, like really late at night, they'd show these old Hanna-Barbera cartoons that they had bought the rights to, and that was one of them that they would show every once in a while. And well, occasionally they would show it with a laugh track added, and that was actually pretty, that was pretty funny.
I'd never heard of that before. I bet that was like the first step to like Adult Swim, you know?
Yeah.
That was their first act of like doing something just crazy and ridiculous.
Yeah, and they would have guys like doing like the way over the top studio audience where the bad guy would, you know, be telling his plan and you'd hear someone, people in the audience gasp and some guy go, "Oh no!" Like with a goofy cartoon.
But that's great, man. I'd love to see that. I've never heard of that before.
But yeah, this guy just, he was the perfect choice for this game.
Yeah, he really was.
Timing and just the way his voice sounded, it's like, yeah, it was perfect.
He was only in two Space Quest games. He was right. In Space Quest 4 and Space Quest 6, but he definitely went on to become, like, a part of what people thought about when they thought about Space Quest, just because he was so dead on for the tone of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Good thinking!
I mean, you talked about it a little bit in the beginning, that this was like your first one.
This was the first Space Quest game I played, hated it for a year, and then went on to love it. And now it's my favorite. There's something really super dark about this game, where they definitely were taking on the like darker conventions of sci-fi where Roger goes into the future and he sees his home planet and it's totally in ruins. And then later when you go to kind of face Sludge Vohal, he lives in this just giant computer fortress where it just looks like all these giant squirming wires and it's just like, you know, you fall off the edge of the walkway that you're walking on and it's just like forever. Like, it was just really, really dark looking, and I thought that was really cool. And I know that Mark Crow, one of the two guys from Andromeda, has said in an interview in the past that he still considers this to be one of his best video games he's ever made, like the best video game he ever made. And I can totally see that. It's really great.
Oh yeah, they had some awesome scenes in this game that were like, you know, they had the mall that you go to and you have to get a job at a fast food place to earn money.
Yeah, that was a really great thing that was only in the voice version of this game where, and this was really where the taste and smell icons paid off, where if you tasted or smelled any of the ingredients of the burgers while you were trying to make them, and it was like an arcade sequence where you had to make like 80 burgers to earn money to buy something that you needed in the game. But if you tasted any of the ingredients, like if you smelled the pickle, he would go, "My name's the pickle. Put me on the burger. I like to go first." And they had like talking animations and everything.
Yeah.
And
when I played sequence.
Really weird. And however old I was when this game came out, I guess I was 9 when it came out, but I'm sure I was much older than that when I played it. It was the funniest thing in the world, and me and my friend Ben would play it all the time and just quote this one scene of all the pickles and the onions and the tomatoes saying absolutely ridiculous things.
Yeah, and then I remember that in that same mall, there was like a software store that inside they had parodies of all these other games. Like they had a parody of Chuck Yeager's game, like his flight sim game, and they had like create a checkers set that was like a video game where it's like, make the checkers board any way you want as long as it's alternating.
And then you actually had to purchase a hint guide for Space Quest 4.
Right.
In order to beat
the
game. You
were in the future, I think, at the time, so you were able to buy a hint book for the game you were currently in. Or, you know,
right.
And one of the other cool things was when you were in the different games, it would actually change at the top of the screen, like where it would normally just say Space Quest 4, would actually change that to say whichever one you were in at the time, which is kind of cool.
So let's see what else we have for the fun facts section in this game.
One of the things you had looked up was about the graphics. I did not know how they did that. That's pretty cool.
You know, I hope I'm not making that up. Pretty sure I'm not. I've definitely seen somewhere photos of them filming Well, let me just tell people what it's about. In all the previous Space Quest games, the graphics were created completely on computer. It was Mark Crow sitting at a desk, yeah, pixel by pixel, building this game. In this one, what they did actually was, for the backgrounds, they hand-painted them and then digitized them. And for the character sprites, they filmed them. They dressed the guy up like Roger Wilco, filmed him with a camera, and then digitized that. Looking at the sprites, that's definitely what it looks like. The movements are very natural, definitely respond to the physics of what a human body would respond to, you know. And I really like that look, because what ends up happening is, you know, it doesn't look like a painting in a video because they're both still fairly pixelated. You know, it was 1991. So what happens was the painting gets pixelated and the video of the character gets pixelated, and they both kind of end up meeting in a middle ground, and they blend in a way that if it was just a clear video of a person and a clear painting, it would just look goofy, you
sure,
know?
Yeah.
But since both of these things were pixelated, they kind of blended it in a really interesting way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I wasn't aware of that, but I do remember seeing some pictures of the backgrounds, like paintings of them and stuff, somewhere. Maybe it might have been on the disc. There's a lot of bonus content on some of these, like in the collection,
yeah,
and stuff. One of the things that was also pretty cool was when you did travel back to the previous games, which I had mentioned earlier, when you go to Space Quest 1 and 3, everything, all the graphics around you, like the environments, are the ones from the old game, so there's still that old pixelated graphics and stuff with your much more modern-looking version of Roger wandering around in them.
Yeah.
And they were able to, because you were using, you know, the ones, since it is the newer version of Roger, they were able to pick environments that he would still function in, because mm-hmm. he wouldn't have fit in all of them.
Right. I believe he's actually, one of the places he goes to is the bar in Space Quest 1,
right,
and the patrons of the bar actually ridicule him for his excessive color palette.
Nice. And yes, if you try and get out of the ship in Space Quest 3, you will die because you no longer have the thermoweave underwear that you had back in 3.
It's true.
To survive that planet.
And Space Quest, that's the only role that Space Quest 3 has in the whole game.
It's for that one gag.
Another thing about Space Quest 4, it cost over $1 million to produce.
Wow.
Some King's Quest game, I don't remember which one, was the first game ever to cross the $1 million barrier. Not the first Sierra game, the first video game ever. Space Quest 4, I imagine, came soon after that and also cost over $1 million to produce. So I don't think we're talking about four guys in a garage making a video game anymore.
Well, not if they had to, you know, have painters and hire an actor and hire Gary Owens, and you know, maybe that's how they got him, was they actually had a budget for this one. So you add on here, this is also the last one that both guys from Andromeda worked on.
It's true. The two guys from Andromeda, this was the last time they worked together on a Space Quest game. There was no big falling out or anything. They said they just needed a change of pace. They had been making a living doing Space Quest games for a number of years. So Mark Crow moved to work for a subsidiary of Sierra that was called Dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember seeing that logo a lot on these old PC games, some of the other ones we used to play.
Do you remember what any of them were? I don't remember seeing it.
Yeah, I can't remember specifically. I might have to look that up. Because I know some of the ones we used to play were like Red Baron and stuff, but I don't know if those were... I believe that one was Dynamics, which we didn't know how to pronounce because they spelt it all weird. Yeah, it looks like Red Baron. Okay, that is the one we played a lot that had the Dynamics logo, was Red Baron.
Gotcha.
We always pronounced it Dynamix as kids, but you know.
I'm making it up, so you could have been right.
I have no idea. We also used to pronounce Magneto Magneto or something goofy like that. So.
Oh yeah, I used to do that too. I think everybody used to do that. You know, it was a different time. We didn't have this media that we have now.
Yeah.
But I definitely remember that Dynamics mostly created games that were not like Space Quest. They were a lot of like flight simulators mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So
they did a lot more action oriented games.
And Mark Crow, more recently, has been designing all those Godzilla games that come out, like Destroy All Monsters and stuff like that.
Interesting.
I'm not going to put my lips on that.
So then in 1992, they actually came out with a Space Quest comic book. It was produced by Malibu Comics. The first issue was in color, and the second two issues are in black and white, and had a different writer. it's actually really hard to find the actual physical copies, but you can download a PDF of them from spacequest.net, which is actually big thanks to the guys on the forum over there, because they helped us fact check a lot of this stuff that we're talking about.
Oh yeah. I've got them, we'll talk about them later, definitely. And the website, spacequest.net, is like one of the best fan sites I've ever seen, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. And you've actually read this comic.
I have, just from the PDFs off of spacequest.net, and, mm-hmm. They're okay. They're not great by any stretch of the imagination, but, Malibu Comics was definitely kind of a junky comic book company back then. They put out stuff like Prime and Nightman, which is like a goofy comic book. There's a famous cover. Anyway, I should not get off into that tangent. The Space Quest comic, it has actually not just a different writer, but a completely different creative team from the first issue to the second two issues. I don't think Mark Crowe and Scott Murphy, the two guys from Andromeda, had anything to do with the comic book. But
it's very likely they weren't even aware of its existence.
To this day.
Yeah.
But one cool thing about it that they definitely did do right is that some parts of it are kind of like Mad Magazine, in that you'll have the main action going on in the middle of the panel, and then off to the side or in a corner you'll have like some tiny little aliens doing something completely different. So there's kind of a lot to look at and a lot of stupid jokes like all over the place, which I thought fit Space Quest very well.
Yeah. Now I'm just flipping through a few pages here because I had it open in the background. And it's very strange because for some reason I recognize some of these panels, but like I don't know if it's something I found later or maybe I'm assuming they never did a reprint of them, because why would they have?
I think they use some of the art on spacequest.net is like header art.
Oh, okay, maybe that's where I've seen
it
before.
I think they use the cover for issue number 2 on there, and various other places around. You could have seen it anywhere, who knows.
Did it actually follow a plot of any of the games, or was it just kind of its own thing?
It did. It was the first game. Okay. All three issues are the first game, but they add in characters and situations and all kinds of stuff, but it does roughly follow the first game.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks kind of strange, but, I might have to check it out just because it's a Space Quest comic book. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, they have the whole thing on spacequest.net, so we'll post a link in the show notes for that. Then in 1993, they came out with the next sequel, Space Quest V, The Next Mutation. And other games that came out that year were Day of the Tentacle, which is one of my favorite adventure games.
One of the best.
Yeah. Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which was a LucasArts game, but it's kind of like Smash TV, if people are familiar with that, where it's the top-down view, very action-oriented and very fast-paced and crazy. I don't know what all it's for. I do know there's a Super Nintendo version that I have that's pretty fun.
Yeah.
Super Street Fighter 2 came out at this point, so this was when the Street Fighter craze was going strong.
Yeah.
Star Fox, which was one of the first Nintendo games to use polygons, because they actually were doing stuff with that Super FX chip at the time.
That's right.
Mortal Kombat 2, which never been huge into the Mortal Kombat games, but...
Sure.
A lot of people really like 2. That's one of the probably the highest regarded out of that series. NBA Jam, which actually that's another game where I played a ton of the Super Nintendo version, because it's just
the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, it's just this very like goofy arcadey basketball game. It doesn't even try and be realistic in any way. You can
your
dunk
basketball
from,
lights on fire.
Yeah, you can dunk from half court and crazy stuff like that. Myst came out that year, which I'm sure anyone who has used a PC from that era has probably played that game.
I think their sales numbers were actually larger on that game than the number of people that there were on the planet at the time.
Yeah. The only people that were buying it were people that lost their other copy. It was so ridiculous. And it was ported, you know, since ported to pretty much everything that can run it, which is, at this point, pretty much everything. Doom came out that year, which was, you know, not the first first-person shooter, but probably the most popular. Or is the first one to get popular. Now, Return to Zork, I've never really played the Zork games, but they're very well respected in the... and I don't know if that was another text-based one, or if that point that was the one where they were first doing graphics with the Zork games.
Oh, I think they were. I think that was first person, like Myst, and it had. And I'm pretty sure that's the one that had like videos of the characters.
Okay.
And
my
friend's dad would stay up all night and just go walk around and talk to all the pretty girls in the video game.
I see. Kirby's Adventure, which, you know, Kirby games are fun, but they're pretty, I mean, they're very kid-oriented. Gabriel Knight, Sins of the Fathers. Now, Gabriel Knight's another series I've heard that at least the first one in the series is amazing. Never really played them, though, so. And then the Atari Jaguar came out, which... as well as the 3DO, both of which were quickly forgotten.
Bad year for consoles.
Yeah, and then on the Sierra front, they came out with Police Quest 4, open season, Leisure Suit Larry 6. What's that?
Open season sounds like such a terrible title for a Police Quest
game.
Yeah,
it's very strange. I'm trying to remember. I've played several of these, but... Police Quest was one of those where it kind of got less charming as the series went on. It was like,
yeah.
One of the things that made it so good was that it was that same old, like, engine as, you know, the old... I think 1 had the same engine as Space Quest 1 and 2, and then 2 mm-hmm. had the same engine as Space Quest 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember much beyond that. I remember I've played them, but they were kind of forgettable.
I'm kind of under the impression that they... deviated greatly from the Quest standard.
Mm-hmm.
They were like a very different type of game.
Yeah. They became kind of a dark murder mystery type thing.
Yeah.
And then the Leisure Suit Larry 6, Shape Up or Slip Out, which was another one of those Leisure Suit Larry games that... yeah, exactly. They never lost their cornball sense of humor, I guess. And then Quest for Glory 4, Shadows of Darkness, which...
That's a good one.
Which one is that in the series?
That's the one, that's the kind of Transylvania one that has the vampires and the monsters and the whatnot.
Yeah, good times.
Really good. So in 1993... very exciting year for system requirements, let me tell you. We are all the way up. Let me clear my throat for this. We are all the way up to a 286 CPU.
Whoa.
We've got 640 entire kilobytes of RAM. We've got EGA graphics you could still play at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The mysterious MCGA graphics. We have VGA graphics, which is how most people know the game. As far as sound, we've got Adlib, Disney Sound Source.
I've never even heard of that one.
I have no idea what that is. Game Blaster, MIDI, you can do MIDI if you want. Microsoft Sound System, you can do your PC speaker. Pro Audio Spectrum, PS1 audio card, Roland MT32, Sound Blaster, Tandy PC Junior, or Thunderboard sound card. The game came on 3.5 floppy disk only. No CD release on Space Quest V. We'll get into that later.
Yeah.
Yep. Price $69.99.
That's crazy.
Wow. $290 for 5 Space Quest games,
yeah.
Not counting the comic books and the remake.
Yeah.
Wow.
That blows me away.
Yeah. Interface point-and-click, the classic Sierra point-and-click that we described earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The plot of Space Quest V deals with Roger enrolling in StarCon, which is kind of like the space government of the future. He becomes the cap, and due to a computer error, his aptitude test makes him become a captain of a ship, which turns out to be a garbage scow.
Yes.
complete, of course, with wacky crew, because this is a science fiction comedy. He meets his future wife, the curiously named Beatrice Wankmeister, and he competes for her attention with Rames T. Quark, who is like a like a sleazy, winky William Shatner parody.
Right.
This character, of course, goes bad. And Roger and Bee end up together, and that's Space Quest V in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Space Quest V is kind of a weird game.
It is. It's a departure quite a bit from the rest of the series.
You know, and we have this in the fun facts, but let's get into it now. Mark Crow, one of the two guys from Andromeda, designed this one solo, without Scott Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Scott Murphy was a bit of the dark influence on Space Quest, because once Mark Crow had the reins, the game was a lot lighter. The color palette's lighter, the sense of humor, you don't get made fun of a lot. I mean, Roger's still a loser, but he's also really muscly. Like, we were talking about how he was starting to get really muscly at the beginning of the remake of Space Quest 1. He's like a powerhouse in this game all of a sudden.
He actually, the character design, oddly enough, is a little bit more... Kirk from original Star Trek. He's shaped like that, you know, and has blonde hair and everything. Mm-hmm. And then the guy that's Quark, that's supposed to be the parody, is more like Shatner from the movies of Star Trek. So they kind of both kind of look like Shatner, but in different ways.
I think I like this game a little more than I should, just because it's probably the second Space Quest game that I played, maybe third. It's definitely one that I bought on discs at the toy store when I was a kid, so how can you not love playing that, you know?
Right.
And, you know, despite the fact that it's a big departure, for even more reasons that we'll get into later, it's still a really fun game. You know, it's really light and really fun, and there's a lot of stuff I really like about it.
Yeah, this one... I do remember liking it. Looking back, it's one of those that it just seems so out of place, you know. And I even remember thinking that as a kid playing it, that I'm like, this one doesn't really fit in with anything else. And that's when I would have been like the closest to a Trekkie I've ever been, which would have been back when I actually watched Star Trek: The Next Generation on a regular basis.
Uh-huh.
Because I've never really been like a major Trekkie or anything. But my same friend that I grew up with that I played Space Quest games with was, so, like, I remember him thinking this one was even more hilarious because of all the Star Trek references, but...
So they got you hook, line, and sinker, huh?
Yeah, so I think he might have enjoyed this one a little bit more than I did. The puzzles and everything I remember liking, you know, there was nothing wrong with the actual design of the game, it was just the whole aesthetic of it was so different than the rest of it. And I was also very disappointed when I found out that it didn't have the voices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is one of the things you have as a fun fact.
You know, we just keep getting into them by accident, so
let's
just launch into the fun facts, man.
That's how it goes. So I guess because of budget concerns, that was the whole big reason why they never did a CD-ROM version, that oral version with speech. So the only way to have it on CD was to buy the collection, which they never, you know, retroactively added speech or anything. It's still the same as the disc version. Yeah, that was kind of a downer because, you know, they had such awesome voices for 4 that I was really hoping that this one would continue on. And when I first booted it up was after I bought the collection and was like, really? The later game in the series is less advanced in some ways?
Yeah, it does seem weird when that first block of text pops up and you're not hearing anything.
Yeah. but yeah, like we mentioned, like the bulk of this game, whereas most the ones, like, they would have little parodies mixed in from various different things. This one was more or less, the bulk of it was a Star Trek parody.
Yeah.
Both the original and Next Generation, which was getting pretty popular at the time. So a lot of the fans didn't like this, I can only assume, because it was so different than the normal Space Quest games.
And not only different, but not original.
Right. This is true. That was one of the things the other ones did pretty well. Was they had parodies, but they were not as many of them were so overdone at the time. I'm sure now, if people were like, oh, a Arnold parody, that's been done. But, you know, back then it was still kind of new. But it also introduced the Starcon, which is kind of the, like you mentioned, the space government that they had, which was basically a parody of Starfleet from the Trek.
Not even really a parody. They were just kind of like...
straight up the same thing.
This is Starfleet.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I remember playing it and thinking it was really weird. I'm like, why would Roger even care about trying to go better himself? It just seemed so out of character for him. It's like he always seemed like one of those characters whose goal in life was to be left alone.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, definitely. And although StarCon was only in Space Quest V, this game, and the next game, Space Quest VI, which are only 2 out of 6 games in the series, it's definitely something that's thought of as kind of being in all Space Quest games, which is kind of weird.
It's one of those things where there's nothing in the previous games that make it not work retroactively, which I think is what it's just become. Like when we were going, when I was going over the notes, I didn't even realize that there was no reference to it at all until this game. It's like I was so used to it being part of the universe.
It's true.
It was another one where the parody title tied kind of right in with the plot, because there was some sort of toxic goo or something that was transforming people into crazy mutants, which was one of the things you had to try and stop from happening.
The front cover of the game features Roger Wilco standing in an ocean of puke, which, you know, I thought was really cool back then.
I'm just kind of looking through on SpaceQuest.net on the story because I was trying to remember what it was. It's a little bit more forgettable of a storyline, so it's unfortunately.
Yeah, it is. You've got the robot woman who was the female counterpart of the Arnold Schwarzenegger robot from Space Quest
III.
Yeah, and she ends up being a member of your crew and stuff. Since so much of the storyline was erased kind of in the next game, I think that's one of the reasons it's so forgettable. But we'll get into that when we get over there. But like we said before, this game was solely designed by Mark Crowe, only one of the two guys from Andromeda, and he did it at the company Dynamics, which we were talking about before. So this wasn't produced in-house at Sierra. It was produced at the subsidiary Dynamics that Mark Crowe was now working at, doing like flight simulators and stuff. But yeah.
It did have a crazy battleship parody where you had to take on Captain Quirk head-to-head in like basically a game of battleship, like the board game.
That's right, yeah. But I don't think it really matters if you win or not.
No, I think it just changed a few dialogue lines. It's either he gets all mad at you and I think accuses you of cheating, or he just kind of like laughs at you and walks off. But it's all just trying to impress Beatrice, which if you know, when you finish the game, you end up together. But then it kind of, in six, they kind of... like you said, they kind of retcon away a lot of the stuff from 5.
And by winning that battleship game, you get those all-important adventure game points.
This is true. And as we know, every good game has points. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all I have on that one. That's probably
Space
the one
Quest
I 5. Played the least. That's probably the one I... maybe went back to once or twice after beating it, but
really,
yeah,
less than the original version of Space Quest 1.
Maybe, I don't know. See, it just seems like that one, I, as far as the modern ones went, at least, I didn't go back to very often.
Right. Yeah. So let's move on now to the year 1995. That's 2 years after Space Quest V. We're now in Space Quest VI, The Spinal Frontier. Other games released in the year 1995, Full Throttle, one of the video game designer Tim Schafer's great games over at LucasArts. Also The Dig, which I'm currently playing through right now. I've never played it before.
I've actually beat that one back in the day.
You know, it's not like any adventure game I've ever played. Almost every other adventure game is funny.
Yeah.
But this is attempting to do with like a high drama science fiction story, and I'm finding it to be really interesting.
I actually even read the tie-in novel, which at the time wasn't too bad. I mean, I was probably like 18 when I read it or something, but
that's really.
Yeah, that's actually one people might want to go look up, because you know those like bizarre short stories that are in the sci-fi collection? This is like an adventure game of one of those, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's not to derail you too much.
We've also, darn you, Gregory.
I know.
We've also got Mortal Kombat 3. I don't really know what the difference between Mortal Kombat's is, so I can't really help people out there.
More characters or something.
Super Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island, Chrono Trigger. I'm pretty sure you shoot stuff in that game.
Chrono Trigger is you didn't really play Super Nintendo that much.
We should maybe note for people that don't know me that well that I have not really played that many video games.
Yes, mostly adventure games. But this one is a very cool time travel sci-fi fantasy RPG thing with great characters by like Akira Toriyama that did like Dragon Ball and stuff like that. Yeah, that's an awesome game. It's one of Square's best games. It's on DS now, so yeah, if people couldn't find it before, now it's pretty easy to pick it up.
We've got Command and Conquer. Don't know what that is.
Real-time strategy PC game.
All right, we've got Earthbound, which is very high on my list of games I want to play but haven't yet.
I think you would enjoy that. Very old school kind of RPG, you know, very, like, everything's menu-based. The battles are very the old, like, just menu where you attack the guy. But it does some very unique things. Like, it's actually in a modern setting. It has a pretty good sense of humor about everything. And
it looks like it has a very strong personality, which is what always kind of really attracted me to it.
Yeah, very simple look, but very cool.
What?
It has a very simple look to the graphics, but it's very cool.
Donkey Kong Country 2, Diddy Kong Quest, and I was really disappointed because in between Space Quest 4 and 6, Earthworm Jim 1 came out, which I really wanted to put on one of these lists, but we didn't get to. And then we've got Gabriel Knight 2, The Beast Within from Sierra. They also put out another horror game, Phantasmagoria. I've heard really good things about both those games. I know a lot of people really like Torrent's Passage, which is another game that Sierra put out. Those are all Sierra games, but not really like classic adventure games like Space Quest or King's Quest and stuff were. And then console-wise that year, we have the PlayStation, which went over okay.
Some people might have played that one, I think.
Sega Saturn didn't do so well.
Not so much, no.
Although I actually have some friends who now play Sega Saturn, I guess because you can burn the games for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of one of those, it's so bad it's funny now, like the what Night Trap and stuff, where it's like an 80s horror movie that you're playing, basically just through the interaction of you have different security cameras set up around the house, and yeah, you're trying to stop some guys from breaking in. Yeah, it's very, very bizarre system.
That sounds pretty awesome. And then, but maybe second only to an even more bizarre system, also released in 1995, the Nintendo Virtual Boy.
Also known as What the Hell Were You Thinking?
You know, I only played it once. They had it, like, on display in Macy's or something, and it was not fun for a minute.
It's very headache-inducing. It's Nintendo's one big misstep since they've been doing consoles.
Which I think a lot of people were kind of hoping or expecting that the Wii would be like kind of a sequel to the Virtual Boy before it came out, you know?
Yeah, people were thinking. So this one, the Space Quest 6, to give people an idea, it stepped it all the way up to a 386 CPU.
Wow, that's a whole extra 100.
Yeah, 8 whole megs of RAM. now, these are the minimum requirements, because I have to say, I was running it on a 486, and with all the other settings turned up, and it still had a few parts where it took a while to load things. It had a Super VGA graphics, so I guess it had a little bit more color depth to it. And then it, of course, supported the series of sound cards that were popular at the time, the Adlib MIDI, which is still used for a lot of things today, Jesse could give you a synopsis on why MIDI's awesome. Microsoft Sound System, Pro Audio Spectrum, the Roland MT32. So some of these are pretty consistent across the board, what was supported on these games. Sound Blaster, of course, is still one of the most popular cards on the market. And then you needed a 2x CD-ROM to play this game.
Wow. Do you remember that when CD-ROM drives had numbers on them?
Oh, yeah. And now they're like 50-something times, and they don't like even advertise. Spinning up now, yeah.
God, I remember that, like, seeing, like, an 8X and being like, wow.
Yeah. So this one was only on CD, because this was at the point where games were not being produced onto diskettes anymore by 1995. And it was also the same classic point-and-click interface as the last couple. We couldn't find the price point on this one. I'm assuming it would have been within that same, like, $60 to $70 range.
Which means that we definitely broke the $300 barrier on the 6 Space Quest games.
And I think I bought it in a collection for maybe $30 with all of them. 1 through 5, and then 6. The later collections had 6. I actually bought it separately at the time. But this one, because of the events in the end of 5, where it's unclear as to what's happened with, you know, the death of Captain Quirk and various other things, they strip Roger of his command and of his garbage scow, and they make him a janitor again. So he then uncovers a plot by an elderly Starcon widow to take over the body of his friend Stellar Santiago, and then he has to shrink himself down and chase this villain through Stellar's body. So it was kind of an inner space parody thing going on here. It was another very strange plot. But yeah, since they still have Starcon, they still had a lot of Star Trek references, like the like DS9. You're on a space station initially. They have some Wing Commander jokes thrown in there, like the I believe it's the guy that is your commanding officer is one of the lion people from Wing Commander. But yeah, I remember really liking this one. In fact, this one, like I said, I had what was our old computer, which was the 486 in my room, and then my dad had bought a newer work computer for his office, because at this point some of my older brothers had moved out and he had an office at home. So when they would go on vacation for the weekend, occasionally, like for their anniversary or different things, I would actually sneak onto the good computer, which I think was like a Pentium 1, which was a pretty big step up at the time from a 486, and install this game, and it would run flawlessly on there. Because I was trying to play through it before they got home, because I had to have it uninstalled and off that computer. So,
oh, man.
I wasn't allowed to use it for gaming. So,
wild.
So, yeah, I remember really liking this one enough to try and sneak it onto that computer, you know. Like, I was totally up to some mischief. I mean, that's the extent of what I was up to as a kid. Such a troublemaker, you know. But, yeah, it had the voices back, which I thought was awesome. Like I said, that would have been the era that I was into Star Trek, so... and I actually really liked DS9 as a whole, so having those references in there was pretty cool. And I really liked that they made him a janitor again. They changed the character design so that he actually looks like Roger Wilco again. Mm-hmm. And then they actually kind of made Beatrice from the other games kind of a jerk to him in this one, so it actually made you really like the new character, who was the Stellar Santiago that was his friend. Kind of... Even though it kind of disrupts their own timeline, they didn't seem to care. They wanted you to to end up with her instead.
Yeah, like you said, they did a lot of retconning of Space Quest V in this one.
Mm.
Pretty much anything that happened in Space Quest V actually was done away with within the first few minutes of Space Quest VI.
Yeah, and I believe that was very intentional.
Definitely. You know, and they Space Quest VI was definitely had a really good aesthetic setup, and it had its own world and its own sense of humor and stuff. And it wasn't necessarily totally in line with Space Quest, but that was okay, because there were at least four games that were totally Space Quest and awesome.
It totally, and I don't have it very well. I mean, it fit the within its own world. It was very consistent, I think, is what I'm trying to say. Within its own world, whereas 5 was very uneven as far as the humor versus the parts where it was trying to be serious. They did a lot of things in this one, like you know, the same, like the old way of having like a monster trying to get you at one point, but in the form of a couple of like big bruiser guys that are after you trying to stop you. You actually have to beat them by putting a different mental implant in the back of one of their heads, so that instead of trying to beat you up, you put in the burlesque mod and he starts stripping.
That's how you get one of them. The other one, you scuff your feet on the floor until you have static electricity, and then you touch the computer implant in the back of his head and he dies.
Yeah, and they did some cool stuff referencing the old games. This one was very aware of itself in a lot of ways, which was kind of cool, because that was another type of gag that wasn't heavily overdone at the time. Like when you first start in your bedroom on the space station, there's a lot of things from old games that are strewn about your room, which is just like super messy. There's just clothes on the floor, and there's like the golden mop from the first one is in there, and just like all these references to the old games, which was really cool. So this like it was definitely made for the fans.
Yeah, and a part of that was probably because it was designed largely in part by no one who had anything to do with the previous games. His name was Josh Mandel. Actually, I think he did some work on Space Quest IV.
Okay.
But he was not a designer of, not a lead designer of any of the previous Space Quest games. He was definitely more of a fan, or at least the game that he created seems so much like a tribute that it seems like he was a fan. And what happened with Josh Mandel was the game was pretty much done. It's implied that the game was very close to being finished when he had a disagreement with Sierra and left before the game was done. And they actually got Scott Murphy, one of the original designers of Space Quest, one of the two guys from Andromeda, to come in and finish the game off. And when the game was released, it was promoted as being by Scott Murphy, designed by Scott Murphy, one of the original Space Quest designers, when he barely had anything to do with it. And he's been interviewed since then, and he seems just as baffled about this as anybody. In fact, he seems to even maybe kind of not be totally fond of Space Quest VI.
Oh. I see.
I've heard some things. I mean, he's definitely an angry guy, which is what he's definitely, his sense of humor is very dark, so he may have made jokes about Space Quest that were a little darker than he actually feels, but he's said some things about Space Quest VI. So that's kind of the story of the behind the scenes on Space Quest VI. There were a couple of different working titles for Space Quest VI, other than The Spinal Frontier, which I guess is a reference to Spinal Tap? I'm not really sure.
Gotcha. I've never seen it, so I don't.
Well, just the title, Spinal? I don't know if that's where the term...
I thought it would be... I think it was maybe combining that with The Final Frontier, the Star Trek.
Oh, right. Thing. Definitely, yeah. I mean, the word spinal is now used as like a word for comedy. I don't know if that came from Spinal Tap or not. But they had other titles for this game while it was in development that are way better than The Spinal Frontier.
Yeah, my favorite is the Warren Corman Santiago as Roger Wilco. And again, being the innocent kid that I was, I didn't take any kind of connotation that could totally be taken out of context. I just thought it was funny because I had seen Innerspace. So, you know, that's more along the lines I was thinking, but I'm sure it could have been taken the wrong way pretty easily.
Sure. And the other title was Roger Wilco in Innered Space,
right,
which is a play on Inner Space. Also very good. Gary Owens is back as the narrator in this game, as we mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And he's amazing. One of the best parts of the game, again.
Yep.
And
if I remember correctly, it seems like I always thought the titles that, you know, all the different versions were kind of weird, and that that part of the game is actually a very small part compared to everything else, or at least I seem to have beat that part of the game very quickly as compared to everything else in the game, where you're actually in the inner space parody.
Right, yeah, yeah. No, that's definitely... the last third of the game, I think, would be generous. It's probably not even that much of the game.
Maybe a quarter, if that. You know, it seemed like a very small, like maybe it was only the last couple of screens even. It was, yeah, it was very strange to have named the entire game around it. I remember at the time, up until I beat it, I was like, I don't really get why it's called this. And then I finally got to the end. I was like, oh, okay, I get it now.
I think my favorite joke while you're inside Stellar Santiago is he sees a paperclip inside her stomach, and it just kind of, you know, muses on why that paperclip could possibly be there.
Nice.
That's a pretty good one. But definitely, you know, like we were talking about the overall feel, this is definitely visually the biggest departure in the Space Quest series. It's instead of the filmed character sprites and hand-painted backgrounds, everything is kind of illustrated in a traditional animation style where it's black lines with colors filled in and the proportions are very cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
So Space Quest VI feels very different from other Space Quest games. And the other thing of note that we have here, the other fun fact, is that there was a demo released for Space Quest VI before the game came out, obviously. And it was... lots of demos and things are like the first level or just a video of the game. But this was a complete game in its own right that used the backgrounds and characters of Space Quest VI and had its complete own story and its own characters and inventory items, and it was fully voice acted. It was like its own mini game that just took a couple of hours to play.
Mm-hmm.
And it dealt with these parodies of the Borg from Star Trek, and they were called the Bjorn, which is like a name in some other country or something.
Sure. Yeah, I never saw these this demo. I mean, I'm fascinated. I'd never heard about this until you were showing me, you know, these research notes you typed up. But yeah,
it's awesome,
man.
Even
some like inside joke if you're playing it, where if you feel the walls, he'll say something about it feeling like a cheap, like fake version of the set or something like that.
Right. These aren't those fancy real game walls. These are just cheap demo walls. Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's available anywhere. Like if anyone has it.
You know, we're going to get on how to play the new games later on in the show, but yeah, that's going to be pretty tough to find.
Okay. And the other thing, you know, it does have a lot of the parodies in the game, and I totally forgot that the Endo Droid, which is, he's kind of supposed to be the new version of the ones that were after you in the old games, only now he's liquid metal. Just like, you know, the other one. And his name is Blaine Romer, and he totally looks like in, you know, the replicant from Blade Runner. Is it Dolph Lundgren that played him? I can't remember who that was.
It is Dolph Lundgren, okay. He-Man himself.
That's right. Yeah, I love that movie, but yeah, I totally forgot that was that guy was in there. And it's pretty funny. I think you have to freeze him with something in a, you know, the pipes underneath the bar, and then you can shatter
spray
him
liquid
a bunch of pieces.
You spray and then you put him in an ice cube tray.
Yeah. So you got to keep him cold, or else he'll thaw out again.
And then he thaws out and beats you up.
Yes, yeah. And one of the ways that he can, or one of the ways he'll kill you is if he gets up to you, he'll put his hand down at your throat and flip you inside out in a very, very cartoony, like very Looney Tunes-esque sort of death sequence.
I don't remember that. I bet it's awesome.
You go now, and I don't rearrange your organs.
And that character you were trying to think of before, I think, is Fester Blatz. Was that
Fester
bug-eyed,
Blatz, you know,
gray guy? Yep. He happened to be on the character page right by that character when I was looking him up. So, so I'm totally
cheating. Yeah, and he turns
right
up
now.
Again in Space Quest VI, he's kind of this sleazy guy who's always trying to sell you stuff in all the games. He's a great character.
But, yeah, no, I really like that one. Like I said, that one, that first section, I must have played through a bunch of times, because like I said, I was always sneaking to try and play it on the good computer, so it ran better. So I think that last little sequence is the only part I've only played, you know, maybe once or twice, but the rest of the game, I'm sure I've played dozens of times trying to get up to that point. Considering I no longer had my save games every time I had to uninstall it. But yeah, that's all I got on 6.
I think we did it.
Okay, so that was it for all the official Space Quest games in the series. So after the end, what did they do? Scott Murphy actually started designing a Space Quest 7 back in 1997, but it was actually canceled the same year. And then in 1999, it was started up again, but then canceled when Sierra ended up firing 2/3 of its employees in one day. After they were bought out by Vivendi. And then there were rumors later that Scott Murphy canceled a version of Space Quest VII that featured online multiplayer play, which I had never even heard of this version of Space Quest VII until last time we had talked about the Space Quest series. But it sounded like some bizarre action multiplayer game just basically using the name. Space Quest.
Oh, no, this is actually a different one. This was
this is something else.
Yeah, this was the Space Quest 7 that Scott Murphy, the original designer, was designing, and they were like, how about in addition to Space Quest, you also have a multiplayer segment to it? Huh. So it was like a normal adventure game that somehow also had a multiplayer, and I have no idea how they were planning to do that. But even he in an interview was like, yeah, it wasn't going to be that cool. So who knows what exactly was going on there.
Yeah, and then in 2002, there was a company called Escape Factory who started work on an action platformer for Sierra that was titled Space Quest. They were pretty much just a publisher under Vivendi. And then that was canceled in 2003.
And recently on the Space Quest forum on spacequest.net, somebody, and I don't remember who, I wish I could remember who, actually linked to the website of a 3D animator, and he's posted a bunch of stuff from this action platformer Space Quest game. And, you know, I feel bad because he's like a guy, and he seems proud of his work that he did on there, but it looked really bad. It looked like just like a cheapo platformer game, you know, like there were so many PlayStation games out in like the, you know, the early aughts or the early 2000s or whatever you want to call them, where you just, you know, skipped around and collected things and hit things. And it was this character that, you know, his feet were really big. Everybody's feet were really big back then. And he had that, you know, at that point in time, that Pee Wee Herman haircut was really popular, where you put the front of your hair up. like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where people, and the character just looked terrible, and he had like a they said that it wasn't Roger Wilco, but the video that this guy posted on his website says Roger Wilco, and he just fought stuff with like mops and climbed walls with plungers and stuff like that. It all takes place in a jungle. It's not even like in space really. It looked really. Yeah, very strange.
That's a very bizarre turn for
around that same time.
I mean, I was gonna say they came out with some crazy Leisure Suit Larry game that I guess did some weird 3D mini game collection or something bizarre with that series as well. So
Yeah, they were in the business of reinventing their classic franchises back then, and I don't think any of it went too well for them. But, you know, maybe it could have been great. You know, I just saw some screenshots in a video. Maybe it would have been really fun. I have no idea. But from what I saw, I'm not sorry that it didn't come out.
Yeah, it wouldn't have really been, wouldn't have added anything to the franchise, that's for sure.
No.
And then in 2008, Vivendi Games merged to form Activision Blizzard. So they don't have any, they don't seem to be showing any interest in really any of the Quest franchises. And, you know, Space Quest being one of the lesser known probably out of their Quest series, is they probably really don't have anything to do with that. I guess the licenses are all up for sale, but no one's bought them yet. And last I heard, they were trying to sell them as a lot of all the Quest games. Is that?
Yeah, I think I heard that too. I'm not exactly sure.
Huh. Which seems kind of like a shame, because, you know, if someone that was a fan of one of the series that just wanted that one came along, they probably wouldn't have enough to buy everything if they're a small company.
Right.
But yeah, so it's kind of not had a very good history since then, unfortunately. Like, 7, there was a demo video. It wasn't even, like, a playable demo. It was just kind of a preview video came out that was on the collection that came out that had all the games up through 6. And I believe you can find that video on YouTube still, but, it looked kind of weird. There's a part where he's on rocket skates or something along those lines.
There was no playable footage even of the game. I think it was just all like cutscene footage, so you really had no idea what it was going to look like at all.
No context at all about what it was going to be.
But Space Quest,
it seems like the kind of series that, if someone like, you know, someone like Telltale or someone along those lines that is actually interested in doing modern versions of some of these characters came along, it could still make a pretty awesome game. But
yeah, totally. Nothing's going on right now.
No.
But Space Quest has had a more successful history in terms of fan games. There's been a ton of fan games that haven't happened, of course, just like anything. Someone talks about making a fan game and releases a few screens, and that's the last you hear of them. But there have been 2 full-length completed Space Quest games released. One was The Lost Chapter in 2001, and that took place in between Space Quest 2 and 3 and actually explained the change in Roger's hair color. And then there was another one called Space Quest Zero Replicated, a little bit of a Matrix joke there, and that took place before Space Quest 1. That game came out in 2003. Both of those games feature graphics that are of where they fit chronologically in the series, which is to say that they're VGA games. They have text parsers. One person made each game. Different people made them. I don't remember the names of the people who made them right now, but one guy made The Lost Chapter, a different guy made Replicated. They were games that were made by just one person at home in their spare time.
Wow.
I've played them, and they're pretty cool. I really like playing them. Yeah.
Cool.
And then...
Wasn't there a remake of 2 in the works, kind of along the lines of 1? That was a fan remake,
that's right,
but it kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Someone else is doing it now, though, I think.
Oh, someone picked that up again, huh?
Yeah, there was one that fell apart, and then there's a more recent one by a company called Infamous Adventures, I think. we'll get that exactly and put a link up. But they're still going ahead with that, and they posted a bunch of screens, and it looks really good, so hopefully that'll come out. And there was actually another company, the company that did a remake of, I think, King's Quest 2. Or maybe 3.
Okay.
And they also did a remake that was recently released of Quest for Glory 2. They were at one point in time working on a Space Quest 2 and released a demo of it, and it looked perfect, like absolutely perfect. But they heard about that other person who was making Space Quest 2, which failed, and they decided not to do it, which is really unfortunate. And the name of that company is AGI, I think, Adventure Games Interactive, something like that. They did LMO in The Lost Dutchman's Mind. I know they did Mine, not Mind. I know they did that game. And again, we'll put that link up in the show notes. But there was also a fan-made attempt at Space Quest 7 that was doing 3D graphics and all that stuff. They were trying to make a totally professional game. I actually had a lot to do with this game. I was a lead designer for at least a few of the years that it was in production. Although I didn't do any 3D work, I did a lot of hand-drawn design work for this game. And then I had to, when my comic book work really kicked in, I had to give it up. But I did like over 100 drawings for the game. I did a bunch of stuff for it in addition to coordinating work with other 3D artists and stuff, and it was really exciting. And then a few years after it was started, quite a few years, Sierra sent them a cease and desist letter, as they are prone to do.
I wonder if this was around the time of possibly them thinking about relaunching a franchise, or maybe this was just because merger talks were already in the works.
I think it was because of merger talks. Okay. It was after they, I think it was after the Leisure Suit Larry and all that reinvention stuff came up. But it was not far before the merger at all. So that I'm sure that had something to do with it. But yeah. And we were written by Josh Mandel, who was the designer of Space Quest VI. He wrote the plot for our game. So it was really exciting. I got to work with him and do some character designs with him and stuff. And that was a really great experience. And there's still a few fan-made games still in production. There is Space Quest Incinerations, which is made by a guy online who goes by the name Datadog. I forget what his real name is, but he actually had this game going when I was in high school, a previous version of it, and I did some character designs for him, but that was about it, and then they folded shortly thereafter. And then within the last couple of years, he started it up again completely on his own, and he's doing some, it's like a combination of 3D and hand-drawn character sprites and some really nice-looking backgrounds, and the game looks great, and I think he's going to finish it. I think he's over halfway done. He's posted a bunch of screenshots. It looks great.
Cool.
Yeah, so I think there's that and the Space Quest 2, and also there's a Vohal Strikes Back game, and that one, they haven't released a ton of material, just some backgrounds and stuff, but they did release a really awesome video on YouTube, where they kind of dress up in a stupid costume and film something kind of stupid, just like the two guys from Andromeda did for Space Quest 3. Sure. I don't know what the status on that game is, if it's still happening or not. Hopefully it is, but we'll link to that one as well.
We had a bit of breaking news. We actually recorded parts one and two of this podcast together. And between editing parts one and part two, we actually got an email from a source that wishes to remain anonymous. But he had this to say. He said, after hearing that you cover fan games in the second part of the show, I thought I'd mention the one I'm working on at the moment. If you're planning on mentioning a game called Vohal Strikes Back, which Colin just talked about in the show, I figured that you might have gathered that it had been canceled, given that any public info on the game has not been updated for a long time, mostly due to the project lead's fear of it being shut down by Vivendi, like Space Quest 7 was. Though now that they don't exist and thus don't hold IPs, that would seem unlikely. So I just wanted to assure you that the game is continuing to be developed, and it looks to be doing a lot better than Duke Nukem Forever in that regard. I'm new to the project and a fan of the series since the mid-90s, and I have to say that so far the game is looking better than Space Quest VI to me. So thank you, Anonymous, for sending that in, and now back to the podcast.
Oh, joy!
I seem to remember enjoying the Lost Chapter more on the level of, like, he took more thought into fitting it into the continuity of Space Quest.
Mm-hmm.
And Space Quest Zero Replicated was kind of like a more silly, wacky, like a little more fun to play. There's like an action sequence at the end where you're sword fighting with lightsabers, you know, and just different goofy stuff like that. So go for it, man.
All right.
Well, play him right now. I'll wait.
Oh, yeah, right now.
Yeah. So, we're pretty much just tying up some loose ends now. I mean, that is pretty much where Space Quest is right now between the official status of the games, which is pretty much just completely stalled. You know, a game hasn't come out since 1995, over 10 years ago. And no one even really totally knows where the rights are right now. Activision Blizzard has them, is trying to sell them. So Space Quest is pretty stalled right now. There's some fan games that are hopefully going to come out. So, yeah, that's where it is, man.
And then over the course of the series, they've had some interesting legal troubles, which you had...
It's true. Like we kind of noted before, they did more than just parody other science fiction games. They would parody everything from the Blues Brothers to McDonald's and to other science fiction stuff like Alien and Star Trek. I tried to come up with kind of a list of companies that had actually threatened Sierra with legal action over being parodied in the Space Quest games. I wasn't able to assemble a very comprehensive list. I got a few, I think, just three, quick. But this definitely factors into my theory that Space Quest is totally punk rock, because they were threatened by legal action from Gene Simmons of Kiss, who we all know is very unpunk rock. ZZ Top... They were threatened with actual legal action by ZZ Top, and they're maybe a little more punk rock than Kiss is, but still not very punk rock. And of course, Toys R Us. They were threatened with legal action by Toys R Us.
Punk rock place ever made. Oh.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be the opposite of punk rock. Actually, I'm
exactly.
not sure.
That's what I
I'm
said.
Not sure.
The least punk rock.
Yeah.
It was interesting because. In the forum thread on spacequest.net, where we had asked for people to look over the notes before we did this show, one of the things they were bringing up was how the dialogue actually changed between some of the versions of the game because of these. Like, there's a reference, the Gene Simmons reference was taken out. Sierra's standing policy basically was, if we can change it to avoid any legal trouble, then just change it, because it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's cheaper for us to get you to change that title than it is for us to hire a bunch of lawyers, or
yeah.
shark money, as Scott Murphy called it, to fix it later when someone gets mad.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's one of those where it's easier to apologize later than ask permission. So I think that's why they just kind of ran with it and then would retroactively change some of the references if they had to.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be asking yourself, how can I, the listener, play these wonderful games? Well, I'm glad you asked that, Collins notes. because Vivendi Universal actually released a collection called the Space Quest Collection in 2006, which includes all the games, except for some reason they left out the EGA version of Space Quest 1. It just has the remake, which is kind of a shame. And they also left out that Space Quest 6 demo that you had mentioned. That was actually its own standalone thing, which is kind of a shame. It's already pretty much out of most stores, but I actually did see a bunch of copies of Half Price Books a few months back, so
cool.
I didn't see any of them left when I went a couple weeks ago, because I was actually going to try and pick up a copy of it while I was there, even though I have the other one, but, you know, I figure I can give it away or something. There's actually, you had said you actually played through most of that collection.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. I guess they use DOSBox, which is a program that slows down because there are a lot of issues with the older Space Quest games, because they're built for older machines, and new machines run much faster.
Sure.
So often you'd be playing an old Space Quest game, and the character would just be blazing across the screen at 1,000 miles an hour.
Right.
So this program, DOSBox, actually slows down your computer so that it processes these games as if it's actually like a 386 computer or something like that. And it totally worked. I've played through a lot of the games on the version of the collection that I bought. And like I said, it totally worked. It installs the games on your computer. It's just like a series of buttons. It's like, which game do you want to put on your computer? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You press the one you want to play, it puts it on your computer. And then you don't even need to put the CD in your computer when you want to play it again.
Oh, nice.
It's awesome. Cool. They're just totally on there. So I love it. Yeah. I know a lot of people are kind of the mindset that, like, I don't want to give Vivendi money because they canceled all the Space Quest games. But, you know, my opinion on it is that they're never going to notice any kind of a boycott or anything like that. You know, if it's like a personal philosophy thing that you have, then, you know, go for it. But I feel like it's more valuable for them to see that they can make, you know, $10 off of you to play Space Quest than for them to just get nothing.
Yeah, they have Blizzard, which has Warcraft, so they're not going to be hurting for money anytime soon.
They're not going to notice if you don't buy Space Quest.
They get that a month from a single person playing Warcraft, so more than that.
But I don't think they even sell the Space Quest collection anymore. I couldn't find it online anywhere. I looked for it.
It's already out of print. So yeah, Amazon, eBay, you know, like people reselling it. Usually you can find like unopened copies of that kind of stuff for, like you said, around like $10.
And
that's probably the best way to go. If you have GameTap, which is a gaming service that they do new games as well, but they have a lot of old games on there, including, I don't think they have every Space Quest, but I think they might have 1 through 5 on there.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, it might be less than 5, but they definitely have a few on there.
And the version of 4 that they had on there was the CD-ROM version, so it did have all the voices and everything.
Oh, awesome, awesome.
I'm just going to look up real quick while I have it. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, it looks like, so they still do have 1 through 5. Whatever
reason, awesome.
They don't have 6 yet. They do have some of the older, like, King's Quest series and stuff on there.
Do they have the original version of 1? Do they have the EGA version of 1?
It looks like it is the original version.
Nice!
Yeah. No, they don't have... It doesn't show the remake. It just shows the original.
They got a little bit of taste over there at GameTap.
Yeah. It's a shame that their service has been having so many trouble getting money. Because they're pretty cool.
They don't advertise on this show, do they?
No.
Okay, good.
we don't really have any sponsors currently other than Project Wonderful ads. And then, you know, there's...
But they're great, Project Wonderful. They're wonderful.
Exactly. I was going to say one of the things with... one of the sad things about everything being tied up in these crazy legal, you know, rights issues and all that stuff is there's the site Good Old Games, which we've mentioned on the show a few times because we all seem to really like what they're doing. And no, they're not a sponsor either. I just think they're cool. And it's GOG.com, and they've actually mentioned that they, you know, they get the rights to as many of these old games as they can, which basically says to me that they would really like to have these games, but Sierra, Vivendi, whoever... whatever you want to call them nowadays, Activision Blizzard, I guess, they don't really have any interest in making deals with, you know, secondary sales, you know, sites like this, that, which is a shame because it'd be another really cool way to get them out there, because one of the things they do is actually update the game to where it'll run on a modern computer, so... then you don't have to have that, like, you know, DOS box in addition to running the game. It'll just run, so...
You know, good old games should just throw them up there. Activision doesn't care. They're not going to notice. Like, honestly, would they even bother telling their lawyers to send these guys a letter over Space Quest? I don't think so.
They actually sell games on there, so they have to be careful with their rights and stuff. So.
I guess that's a problem.
Yeah, I guess they're actually trying to be legit and everything and not get shut down. So, but speaking of like old adventure games, that's a good site to check out for if you're a fan. But anyway, speaking of websites.
Speaking of websites, yeah.
Look at that segue, man. We're on top of
My
it tonight.
God, that is just.
And it only took us 5 hours.
If you want to read more about the wonderful video game series Space Quest, definitely the place you should go. It should be spacequest.net. Like I said earlier, it's run by this guy, Franz, great guy. don't remember his last name right now. It's foreign and very complicated for an American like me to understand. He runs the site spacequest.net. Used to run. He doesn't really update it anymore, but, you know, there's no need really because the games have been dormant for forever.
Sure. It's more about the forums nowadays, so.
Yeah, yep. But spacequest.net is just like a museum of, it's Space Quest history. It's really well organized, organized by game, and then by section after that, and it's just really easy to find out everything you want about Space Quest on this website. Can't recommend it highly enough. Another really great website is The Many Deaths of Roger Wilco. We were kind of talking earlier about how death sequences are a very important part of Space Quest, whether it's... I'm going to have to come up with a couple on the fly here now. Whether it's getting your face bitten off by an alien or getting a radioactive loogie spit on you, this site, The Many Deaths of Roger Wilco, has cataloged every single known Space Quest death in their directory, complete with screenshots and even audio of Gary Owens mocking you for being an idiot. So you should definitely check out The Many Deaths of Roger Wilco. It's tmd.alienharmony.com/rw. A really... Space Quest... You know, I don't really read up on a lot of franchises of this nature, but Space Quest, I think... has commanded a lot of really dedicated fan efforts, and one of them definitely is by a person named Akril. That's what she goes for online. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. And she has been doing a Space Quest webcomic for forever called WSSQID. There's a crossed out U in between the Q and the I, and that stands for Who Says Space Quest is Dead. And that is a webcomic, and it's beautiful. The artwork is beautiful on it. It's cartoony images, like in Space Quest 6, and then a lot of the backgrounds are kind of like 3D looking. It very much looks like Space Quest 6. It all takes place after Space Quest 6, and there's even like some animations and stuff like that of like Roger getting chased by a giant boulder and stuff. Like I said, there's over 250 strips online. It's awesome. If you want to, you know, go past Space Quest 6, that's a great place to go. And another...
Seems to be a lion woman.
There's a lion woman. Yeah, she added her own character, and it's mostly kind of like an odd couple type thing between Roger Wilco and a... I don't think it's a lion. It's the
tiger?
One with the spots. What is that?
A leopard?
A leopard. It's a leopard. It's an anthropomorphic leopard that he is friends with.
So if you're like afraid of furry comics, you might be afraid of this comic. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's bad. I haven't read it. I'm not judging. I'm just saying I'm scared.
There's only half of the time is that character around, so you can read half of the strip and be fine, I think, if you're adverse to that material. And then another must-see Space Quest landmark on the net is my own series of Space Quest drawings, which I abandoned a little while ago and intend to finish someday. For a while I was doing, I'm a comic book artist, as I've mentioned a couple of times in this podcast. And
I've heard about this. You draw comics on the internet sometimes, I hear.
I draw funny books on the interwebs, it's true. I did just a couple of drawings of... I would play a Space Quest game, and then I'd do a couple of drawings based on it, and I kind of invented a style of coloring while I was doing it, where I would have the black and white line art and then color it with pixels. So it would just the colors would be pixelated, but the line art would not be. And you can go to my website, my blog, colinpee.blogspot.com, and then over on the side in the labels or categories section, you'll see Space Quest, and you'll see my drawings there. And we're also going to use those. They should be accompanying these podcasts on the wingdamage.com website.
Yes, and there's a reference to me on the fast food worker, which I found pretty funny. So we wanted to give credit to where we got all this information other than our own shaky memories, as you brought out in the notes. Some of the info was from Wikipedia, you know, the old standby. But most of it was directly from spacequest.net, so we have to give a huge thanks to them. for having such an awesome resource out there. All the other games released that year, dates were from all over the place. So if there were some errors in those, you know, we apologize. But, you know, Colin's only one
man.
Deal
with it.
He does the best he can, okay? You have no right to judge. And we got a lot of feedback and help from all the members on the Janitorial Times forum, which is the forum for SpaceQuest.net, and then some specific people that helped us out. So big thanks to Musically Inspired, Datadog, who is doing the Space Quest Incinerations fan game, Fourth Guy, Akril, who is the one that does the comic, Mad_C33, who was a fountain of knowledge concerning the differences between the different releases of the games that we had mentioned. There was actually more that were mentioned that we even got into, so we'll link to that.
Unbelievable. I couldn't believe the stuff that this guy knew.
I know.
Ridiculous.
So we're going to link to that thread so people can check out more specifics on that if they're interested. Olsen and Vroomfondle, who gave us a quick history about the whole Vivendi Activision Blizzard merger. And then also Joystick.com's Ludwig K, and I know I'm pronouncing your name wrong, Ludwig, I apologize, who also Twittered me to remind me about the Space Quest 6 demo, which was a pretty cool piece of the Space Quest history that I was actually unaware of. So I think that's going to about wrap it up for us. We hope you've enjoyed our Space Quest retrospective. Thank you, Colin, for joining me tonight and for all the hard work you did in doing the research for this.
We made it.
We did it. We only had one major failure at the beginning, but we did it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to check out WingDamage.com.
Thanks for listening to Barrel Roll. For more information, visit WingDamage.com.
Do a barrel roll!